In a case that would have similarities to another more famous case 50 years later with the Dr. Crippen case, the killer had committed Britain's first murder in a train and fled on a ship bound for New York. The detectives took another ship in a cross-Atlantic slow chase that captured the British media's and public's attention like no case before. This is the story of Franz Müller. Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast. I'm Steve, your host. I hope you're all well. Steam-powered engines had started appearing by the late 18th century. In 1803, a vehicle called the London Steam Carriage attracted huge attention from public and press alike when its inventor, Richard Trevithick, drove it that year in London from Holborn to Paddington and back. Trevithick's next attempt was a train, the catchily named Catch Me Who Can, which in the summer of 1808 ran on a circular track in Euston Square, London. The engine took on passengers at 1 shilling each and reached the dizzy speeds of 12 miles per hour. Trevithick had been the first person to successfully prove that a steam locomotive on iron rails was feasible. This led to the world realising just how useful trains could become in all aspects of life, and this led to rapid advances in rail technology. By 1870, over 450 million passenger journeys were used by trains in Britain. In crime literature, from Graham Greene's Stamboul Train, Patricia Highsmith's Strangers on a Train, to Ian Fleming's From Russia with Love, trains have historically been used as a plot device. In modern days, this remains undiminished, with the most recent bestseller, Paula Hawkins' The Girl on the Train. What makes it such a useful tool is its ability to place random strangers within the narrow, claustrophobic confines of a train carriage. Indeed, when trains first ran public services, the public had voiced fears about being enclosed between stations with a stranger, as there were no corridors running down the side of the train between compartments. As the only door that could be entered or exited was the platform side door, and this could hardly provide a safe escape route if the train was moving. In 1864, people's worst fears were confirmed with Britain's first railway murder. 69-year-old Thomas Briggs was the chief clerk at the bank of Messrs. Roberts, Curtis & Co. of Lombard Street. He lived in Hackney, and like many city workers, used the train to get back and forth to work. However, on Saturday the 9th of July, Mr. Briggs had dinner with his niece Caroline and her husband in Peckham. He left their house about 8:30 p.m. with her husband walking him to the bus stop. Mr. Briggs had a walking cane, a black bag, a gold pocket watch and a chain, and a distinctive tall stovepipe hat. He caught the 9:45 p.m. train from Fenchurch Street station for the 20-minute journey to Hackney Wick. When the train arrived at Hackney Wick, two men, Harry Vernaz and Sidney Jones, got into a seemingly empty carriage. But as they entered, they discovered bloodstains all over the compartment, a walking cane and a bloodstained hat. They alerted the guard, Benjamin Ains, and his superior, Mr. Greenwood. They locked the compartment, alerted authorities, but allowed the train to continue to its destination at Chalk Farm. There, the carriage was then detached and sent to Bow Station for examination, and the hat and other articles were handed to the Metropolitan Police. By this time, authorities had been alerted that a body with severe head injuries had been found on the tracks between Bow and Hackney Wick stations. Mr. Briggs, a father of four, was still alive but unconscious, and he was taken to a nearby pub, the Mitford Arms in Cadogan Terrace, where he was attended by a local doctor, Dr. Berriton. He seemed to have been attacked with a sharp object. On the left side of his head, just over the ear, which was torn away, was found a deep wound. The skull was fractured and the bone driven in. On the base of the skull, there were four or five laceration wounds, and there was more wounds in other parts of the head. He never recovered consciousness and died at 11:45 the following evening in his own home in Clapton Square. An Inspector Tanner was assigned to the case. On investigation, it was found that his gold watch and chain were missing, and the hat found in the compartment did not belong to Mr. Briggs. There was a media frenzy over this sensational case, the first murder of its kind, and £300 was offered to the public for information leading to arrest. There was a new outcry from the public about the safety in the trains, because after all, Thomas Bridge was middle class, respectable, and in a first class carriage. They said if he could be murdered there, then no one was safe. Anyone could be plunged into this new kind of hell. The first break in the case came a week after the murder, when on the 18th of July, a cab driver called Jonathan Matthews contacted the police. Matthews stated he'd only become aware of the case, but was suspicious about a German man whom he'd known for 2 years called Franz Müller. He told police that Müller had a hat like the one found in a compartment. Matthews stated that Müller had recently given Matthews' daughter a photograph of himself and a gold ring box from a jewellery shop in Cheapside. When Detective Tanner visited Mr. Death's jewellery shop in Cheapside, they almost immediately found Mr. Briggs' watch chain. Mr. Death confirmed that a young man with a German accent had on the 11th of July exchanged the chain for a cheaper chain and a ring. The photograph of Müller was shown to Mr. Death, who confirmed that it was the same man. When Tanner went to Müller's address in Park Terrace, Mrs. Bly, his landlady, confirmed that the hat found at the crime scene was Müller's, but told the police that he had left her household on the 14th of July. Further inquiries revealed that he had emigrated on a sailing ship, the Victoria, bound for New York early on the morning of the 15th of July. The same day, Detective Inspector Tanner and another officer, together with the jeweller Mr. Death and Jonathan Matthews, boarded a train bound for Liverpool Docks. There, they embarked on a modern liner that was larger and faster than the ship taken by Müller. This would reach New York ahead of the suspect. With the thrill of the chase across the Atlantic and the story being picked up by every newspaper on both sides of the Atlantic, the public in Britain and America had become enthralled in the case. The Americans knew about the case because of the transatlantic telegraph cable. This was an undersea cable running from Ireland to North America. It was first used in 1858. And it cut down the time to deliver a message from 10 days to a matter of minutes. When Müller's ship arrived, he was positively identified and arrested. A search of his possessions found the missing watch, identified by its serial number, and a hat which, although it had been cut down, was believed to be the one that had belonged to Briggs. When the party arrived back in England, a large and unruly crowd gathered at Euston Station to shout abuse at Müller. He was taken to Bow Street Police Station and charged with the murder of Thomas Briggs. Müller came to trial at the Old Bailey on the 24th of October 1864 before Mr. Baron Martin. The Solicitor General, Mr. Sergeant Ballantyne, led for the prosecution, with Mr. Sergeant Barry and his team forming the defence. In the court, evidence against him seemed less conclusive than previously thought. It was all circumstantial. The hat and the watch certainly linked Müller to the crime, but when questioned by the police, he had insisted that he'd bought the hat in the second-hand market in Petticoat Lane, and the watch from a peddler in the docks. No murder weapon was ever found. The prosecution presented their evidence, which mainly hinged on the possession of both Briggs's hat and watch being found in possession of Mueller. Moreover, the hat identified by Jonathan Matthews as belonging to Mueller being found in a railway compartment. It was also pointed out that it was a very unlikely scenario to have bought two items from the same murdered man from two different sources. On the third day of the trial, the defence made their opening arguments. A Mr. Thomas Lee, who knew Mr. Briggs, said that he saw two men in the carriage with Mr. Briggs, one who he described as stout with light whiskers, and the other tall and dark. Neither fitted Mueller's description. However, Lee had not thought this worth reporting to the police at the time. Mueller claimed that he was visiting his girlfriend, Mary Ann Eldred, in Camberwell at the time of the murder. Defending counsel, Mr. Beard, who had been briefed by the German Legal Protection Society, was able to produce a telegram delivered to Mary Ann's landlady, showing that Mueller had told Mary Ann of the proposed visit. The landlady, Elizabeth Jones, also said that Mueller had come round to see her during the time of the murder. But when Mueller's girlfriend was revealed to be a prostitute, and Jones to be running a house of ill repute, the judge advised the jury to disregard their testimonies. According to the law at the time, Mueller wasn't allowed to speak a word in his defence, save give his plea, not guilty. The jury were not swayed by the defence and retired at 2:45 p.m. on the third day of the trial, taking just 15 minutes to find Mueller guilty. The execution was fixed for the 14th of November outside Newgate Prison. On the 10th of November, a deputation from the German Legal Protection Society was received at the Home Office claiming to have new evidence and requesting a stay of execution while it was considered. However, this was to no avail, and on the 12th of November, the Home Secretary, Sir George Grey, announced there would be no reprieve. A few minutes before 8 a.m, Mueller was led to the press room, where the executioner, Mr. Calcraft, put a leather body belt around his waist, to which his arms were strapped. His wrists were strapped in front, and his collar removed before he was led to the gallows. Calcraft then placed the noose around his neck and hooked up the other end of the rope onto the chain hanging from the beam. He drew the white hood over Mueller's head. Calcraft then withdrew the bolt and Mueller dropped a few inches. He was initially seen to be slightly convulsing, but quickly became still. The execution was attended by a large rowdy crowd, estimated at 50,000 people. Despite consistently claiming innocence at his trial and whilst awaiting sentence, Mueller reportedly confessed to the crime immediately before being hanged. Dr. Louis Kappel, the German-speaking pastor appointed to attend the prisoner, asked him, was he responsible for the death of Briggs? Kappel said that Mueller's last words were, "Ich hab es getan." This translates as, "I did it," and I also apologise to any German speakers for the further murder of their language. It was never clear what Mueller's motive was to kill Mr. Briggs. Perhaps it was robbery, and Mueller panicked after committing such a heinous act, added to the fact that the train was slowing, coming towards the station. This might also explain why he took the wrong hat. Mueller was buried at Newgate Prison, and in true Victorian macabre style, a death mask of Mueller was made and is housed at Scotland Yard's museum. After the case, for a brief time, a fashion grew where men would alter stovepipe hats into a design named the Mueller Cutdown. In the following years after the case, before the widespread introduction of cars with interior corridors, existing compartment coaches were fitted with peepholes, called Mueller lights, between compartments, as well as wires enabling passengers to sound an alarm. Well, that's all for the Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast for this week. please join me on Twitter and Facebook. This tale has always been one close to my heart because it reminds me so much of a Sherlock Holmes tale. And it's exactly what Conan Doyle used to do for the Sherlock Holmes stories, to look at old cases and turn them into what we would now call faction. Certainly one of my favourite Sherlock Holmes stories is the Bruce Partington plans. Unsurprisingly, this starts off with a dead body being thrown off a train. Well, that's enough for this week. If you want to discuss this case, or indeed Sherlock Holmes, join me on Twitter or Facebook. I've been Steve, your host. Bye bye.